From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. I emphasize the word day because what's great about this day? What's great about this day is it follows last night. And last night was a nightmare. Last night was a disaster for our country. Last night was disgusting and alarming for anybody who has eyes to see or ears to hear or any kind of an open mind at all. We had riots across the country. There are two police officers shot in Louisville for no reason, just because they're police officers. And by the way, what happened concerning the shooter who deliberately shot those two police officers in Southern California? And that was supposed to be a huge manhunt with rewards for turning information on the shooter. What happened with that shooter? They got the shooter for the two cops in Louisville. His name is Lorenzo D. Johnson, 26. He's charged with two counts of assault on a police officer and 14 counts of wanton endangerment of a police officer. The officers were shot 8:40 p.m. last night while conducting crowd control at Brook Street and Broadway after a large crowd had set fires, damaged property, and failed to disperse after being warned. Oh, yeah, but it was mostly peaceful protests, right? Everywhere. Setting fires is not peaceful protest. Setting fires can ruin people's lives. And what's so sickening about these officers being shot, thank God they're both expected to recover. And neither one, one of the officers was African-American. Okay, why is it open season on cops? Why are we permitting this? Why don't we have a level of outrage? Why not? This is appalling what is going on. And it's going on in response to the judgment of a grand jury, a properly constituted grand jury that was diverse, that was led by a black prosecutor who is the elected attorney general of the state of Kentucky, for God's sake. And what is it that these demonstrations last night all across the country, drawing countless police officers in 50 cities out to respond to people who are frustrated because they're not a bunch of murder charges against police officers, murder charges that anyone who knows anything, even the littlest, tiniest bit about the law, understands that murder charges are inappropriate in a case like this. And let me get very clear about this. The police officers only shot after they were shot at first. And in fact, one of them fairly seriously wounded. He was hit in the leg. The bullet apparently ruptured his femoral artery and blood was gushing forth. Now, what is he supposed to do at that point? You're serving a properly, legally constituted warrant. It's not a warrant that these three cops had anything to do with filing. They were actually handed the warrant. They were said, go ahead, we want you to check and look for evidence in this house. And it was a house that was involved very directly with a major drug dealer who is currently in jail. His name is Jamarcus Glover. He was the former boyfriend of Breonna Walker. May she rest in peace. But for goodness sake, they wanted further evidence about a guy who was dealing in cocaine and fentanyl and heroin and killing people, because that's what those drugs do. I mean, for God's sake, what is going on? You want police not to serve warrants, not to look for evidence in a house that is directly implicated in a very serious drug ring? Okay, so the police officers, and again, this confirmed by civilian witnesses, they said police, police, twice, as they were supposed to do, because it was not a no-knock warrant. The press was wrong in reporting that in weeks past. It was a warrant where they were obliged to knock, announce themselves. They did both. When they got no response, they forced the door open, and then they started getting shot with hollow point bullets. Yeah, hollow point bullets from Kenneth Walker, who was the boyfriend of Breonna Taylor. Okay, so the police officer is supposed to do what at that point? This is outrageous stuff that is going on. It's outrageous stuff. And when you hear some of the commentary, it is so inflammatory and so wrong and so damaging to our country. I do not believe in any form of governmental censorship, but there ought to be civilian, private citizen protests of people like MSNBC's Jason Johnson. This is clip 01. And this is what is responsible for these huge explosion of new demonstrations slash riots last night over Breonna Taylor. It's the complete misinformation claiming that she was murdered. In what universe does the death of a woman in crossfire when her boyfriend is shooting at cops, how does that count as murder? And by the way, what does any of this have to do with race? Where is there the slightest evidence that there was any hint of racial motivation on the part of the police who had been asked to serve a warrant? Listen to Jason Johnson on MSNBC, clip 01.
I'm so disgusted by this. I'm so disgusted by Daniel Cameron's performance. I am so sick and tired of black people going on the air and performing for violence and white supremacy and state-sponsored violence against black people and claiming their mamas and claiming they're because of black men, they care about it. This woman got shot in her house when she was asleep. It's like Atiana Jefferson got shot playing video games with her nephew at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's like Botham Jean was eating ice cream, got shot on his couch. I'm telling people, I'm sitting here in my house right now. I have an IFB in my ear. I can't hear much. So if cops busted into my house right now and shot me on the air, what Daniel Cameron basically told America is that that would be legal. If they thought that there was something wrong, I could be shot in broad daylight on national television in my house because the cops can break in and shoot whoever they want if they're concerned. That is why people are upset.
I want you to say more. Can you just keep going, but maybe pick up on this idea that if you're not safe in your house and you're not safe on the streets, WTF? I mean, where do we go from here?
Yeah. Pepperball. You're not safe anywhere because I can't go anywhere, Nicole. If I go jogging, I could end up like Ahmaud Arbery. You can't go anywhere if you're black.
Okay, this is outrageous. This is completely outrageous and wrong. And the idea was the police who came to the home of Breonna Taylor were not there just because they were concerned about something. They were there because they were ordered as part of a police department ongoing investigation to check for evidence. Evidence had been recovered from other homes associated with the drug dealer Jamarcus Glover. And yes, they had all kinds of surveillance video of him going in and out of Breonna Taylor's apartment, where she also lived with her sister, who was out of town at the night of the shooting. But the idea that there was some attempt by police officers that they had decided, let's go shoot someone and ruin our lives and ruin our careers. One of them, of course, is facing potentially 15 years in prison. Yeah, he's eligible for 5 years on each of three counts. Why did Officer Hinkinson get three counts and not one? We'll talk to you about that, of the charge of wanton endangerment. Also, in the mainstream media, there's at least one outlet that is actually, I think, reasonably addressed what happened with Breonna Taylor. Who is it? We will tell you. You'll be surprised. And more on The Medved Show coming up. This is my... If anybody wants to call on this, I will take a call. Let me tell you what I want to take a call on. If somebody can tell me what these demonstrations, what the protests, what the riots, what all of the upset and the activism that involved tens of thousands of people in cities all across the country, and many of them turning violent, many of them turning destructive, what is it meant to accomplish? The purpose is what exactly? 1-800-955-1776. I mentioned that there was a media outlet that I thought did a pretty good job of getting things right on the Breonna Taylor case. And it's sensitive, it's smart, it's written by a reporter I don't know named Alana Durkin Richer for the Associated Press. Associated Press is not a conservative outlet. It leans to the left. And she writes, "Arrest the cops who killed Breonna Taylor became a rallying cry this summer, emblazoned on T-shirts worn by celebrities and sports stars, while protesters filled the streets demanding police accountability. In the end, none of the officers were charged with Taylor's killing, although one was indicted in connection with shooting into a neighboring apartment that had people inside. That's why Officer Brett Hankinson got 3 counts, because there were 3 people inside. He had menaced with wanton endangerments. That was a charge against him." She writes, "The outcome demonstrates the vast disconnect between widespread public expectation of justice and the limits of the law when police use deadly force. Quote, criminal law is not meant to respond to every sorrow and grief, said Attorney General Daniel Cameron, the first African-American elected to the job in Kentucky." That's what he said after the grand jury announced its decision Wednesday. "And that is true here," Cameron said. "But my heart breaks for the loss of Miss Taylor." Kenneth Walker, who was the boyfriend who had started the shooting on that fatal night, Kenneth Walker has said he fired first because he feared he was being robbed, or that it might be the ex-boyfriend of Taylor's trying to get in. Mattingly, one of the officers, was struck in the leg and returned fire, along with other officers who were outside the apartment. But the officers who opened fire on Taylor were determined by prosecutors to be justified in using force because they acted in self-defense. The officer since fired who shot into a neighbor's apartment, that was Hankinson, was the one who was charged with a felony. Brett Hankinson faces up to 5 years in prison on each of the 3 wanton endangerment charges. The outcome came as no surprise to legal experts who said homicide charges would never stand up in court because the officers were fired at first. Police are shielded by laws and longstanding court rulings that give them wide latitude to use deadly force to protect themselves or others. It's been rare to charge police with crimes in the death of civilians, and convictions are even more rare. Quote, you can't get justice from a tragedy. What we have here is a series of events that culminated in the use of self-defense, both by Taylor's boyfriend and the officers. So said Jan Waddell, a Louisville defense attorney. Just because Breonna was caught in the middle of that and she was the victim of a shooting doesn't mean that either one of these parties engaged in criminal activity. That the officers were not only fired upon first, but had a legal warrant allowing them to legally enter the apartment would have provided them with a powerful defense, experts said. It's not a powerful defense, it's an ironclad defense. That made Taylor's case less clear-cut than other recent killings that have stirred outrage, like that of George Floyd, who died in May after a Minneapolis police officer pressed his knee onto his neck for several minutes. Prosecutors will likely even face challenges in securing a conviction against Hankinson, they write in the Associated Press. Let's go to Linda in Los Angeles. Linda, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Well, thank you. You asked, you can't understand why the people are protesting, and it really harkens back.
No, I didn't say why, Linda. I said, what are they protesting for? What are they trying to accomplish?
But I'd like to preface it by saying, at least while I was alive, I don't know what happened in the 40s, but from Rodney King up until now, there's too many incidents, and barring the technicalities, the legal technicalities, too many incidents of black people being either killed or maimed or attacked by police. And people are tired of it, and particularly in Kentucky. And I think that they're justified and correct in protesting, because what else could they do? They don't want to just sit around and let poor Breonna Taylor be killed and no one is held accountable for it. That isn't correct. If I were her mother,
okay, when
or
you
her
say
brother,
when you say
sister,
no, hold on.
Yeah.
When you say no one is held accountable for it, what is it that you hold on? What is it you think the policemen should have done after they were shot at and wounded?
For that.
What's that? Please listen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I asked you, what is it you expect? What is it you expect a police officer to do if he has just taken a bullet in the leg and there's a guy standing there continuing firing at him?
I would have to research, as I said, the technicalities. But if I'm shot,
it's not a technicality. If someone is shooting at you, it's not a technicality, is it?
You're not letting me finish. That many of these police incidents seem extreme in comparison to one being shot in the leg, and now poor Breonna Taylor, while sleeping in her bed, is now dead. That can't be right. It isn't right.
Okay, first of all, she wasn't sleeping. She was, according to the testimony, because the testimony of her boyfriend, they were watching a movie in bed. They were watching on TV.
She shouldn't have been killed. It isn't right.
No, but of course she shouldn't have been killed. But you know what? You know what? Whose responsibility is it if her boyfriend shoots first? See, this is what I don't understand. How is it blameworthy for a police officer who has been wounded in the leg, whose leg is spurting blood, to shoot back to try to save his own life?
Because, okay, wasn't this, and I'm not a policeman, wasn't this one of those no-knock entries where
no,
the people are
it was not.
Alarmed?
Okay, no,
I would have to research
not.
That. I would have to research that. But being shot in the leg and then you retaliate by just shooting into their bodies, being shot in the leg may not result in a fatality. But if you're shot in the leg and then you retaliate by more extreme measures resulting in death, that's the people, they're just not going to stand for that.
Okay, when you said people are not going to stand for that, I think you are simply wrong. You are simply wrong. I think that most people, regardless of your racial background, regardless of your political outlook, understand that a police officer under fire has to protect himself and to protect others. And the number, you were bringing up all these cases and talking about the 1940s, the number of unarmed black victims who have been shot by police officers has been going down for 5 years. It's been going down ever since Ferguson, because obviously police officers are not stupid. They understand that there is no public or official tolerance for this kind of thing. Linda, I appreciate your call very much. When we come back, is Joe Biden really a centrist? He's running a centrist campaign, or trying to. Look at his platform, says Lan He Chen. And what about this whole idea of the controversy about Trump peacefully transitioning power? We'll get to that coming up. And on the Michael Medved show, just 5 days or 4 days, depending on how you want to count it, next Tuesday, the two candidates for president of the United States, that's right, the former Vice President Joe Biden and the president of the United States, Donald John Trump, will be engaging in a debate. And it seems pretty clear that in that debate, Joe Biden is going to try to emphasize, as he has throughout his campaign, the idea of unity and moderation and putting himself forward as a centrist candidate. Not so fast, says Dr. Lan He Chen, who is a fellow in American Public Policy Studies at the Hoover Institution of Stanford. He's also the director of domestic policy studies and a lecturer in the public policy program at Stanford. What is it about the Biden platform, more than anything else, that you believe, Lonnie, gives the lie to the notion that he's actually a centrist?
Well, there are many examples, Michael. I would say certainly in healthcare, we can start there. What he is proposing is going to lead to a massive federal government takeover of our healthcare system. You're talking about creating something which sounds awfully attractive, the idea of a public option, which is this notion that you're going to have a government plan competing with private plans. But as we know from recent history, anytime you get the government more involved in the healthcare sector, they will eat up more and more share of the private sector side of things. And before you know it, you're going to have a healthcare system with very little choice, where the federal government plays a much larger role. And the public option is something that Biden has been squarely in favor of. Now, when we were debating Obamacare about a decade ago, the public option was considered so liberal, so progressive, that even most Democrats didn't want to embrace it. And now here you have the nominee of the Democratic Party putting it as a central part of his healthcare platform. So that's just one place where I think we can start.
Well, you make it clear in your piece that if you look at the detailed platform planks that the Biden campaign has put forward, that the spending on all those proposals is more than double the spending proposed by Hillary Clinton back in 2016. And that was a liberal platform. Where does most of that money go?
Well, you have $5.4 trillion over the next 10 years, which is what independent analysts have suggested the Biden plan would cost. Some of that is going to health care. You have a significant amount of it going to his plan to offer free college tuition to families making less than $125,000 a year. You also have extensive plans to boost renewable and solar and other forms of alternative energy. You have a very robust plan to expand access to public housing subsidies. You have significant spending on infrastructure. And we haven't even begun to speak yet, Michael, about the tax increases. Biden's tax plan would increase taxes potentially on every American family, even those in the middle income, as well as those making less income. So it is a plan that spends a lot, but also, make no mistake, taxes a lot as well.
And probably also increases the already ridiculous budget deficit at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this. In this matter of health care, on November 10th, 1 week after the election, the Supreme Court, whether or not it has a new member on it, is supposed to be hearing oral arguments on the survival of Obamacare. Right now, Republicans are in this difficult situation where there's a very real chance, and it's probably a 50-50 chance or maybe even better, that the court will go along with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in striking down Obamacare. What happens? What do we replace it with? Because we really haven't heard anything from the president except that he says he has a better plan. He just won't tell us about it.
Well, yeah, and I would certainly, you know, hope that the president puts in a little bit more detail than that as we go forward, because you're right, there is a very real possibility the court will decide against Obamacare and will find it to be unconstitutional because of the lack of the individual mandate now. I think that Republicans have to go back to first principles when they think about health care. And the issue has to be, yes, we need to protect those who have pre-existing conditions, and we can do that, by the way, in a more targeted way than Obamacare did it, which was to put in place this huge federal regulatory edifice that has expanded the government's role in health care. But for a alternative, I think Republicans need to look back to first principles and figure out, first of all, how do you get the cost of health care down? For example, I've been a big advocate of trying to create more transparency in health care markets, so that as consumers, those of us who consume healthcare, understand a little bit better what we're paying for, the quality of things we're getting. It'll enable us to shop and to compare between different kinds of providers and procedures. And you see this in every marketplace, you know, whether it's buying televisions or buying, you know, kitchen appliances, whatever it might be, that when you've got a transparent marketplace with robust competition, prices come down. So that's really where the focus of a Republican replacement plan needs to be. It needs to be on lowering healthcare costs first, not just costs for procedures and services, by the way, but also for prescription drugs as well. So I think Republicans will be in good stead if they can, and the president needs to lead on this, put forward a plan that focuses on getting those costs down first.
Yeah, this is one of those promises from his campaign last time that absolutely has been ignored, which is the idea of a replacement for Obamacare. Let me ask you this. We have the debates coming up, and Karl Rove has a persuasive piece today in the Wall Street Journal that most times debates don't really make a difference. And people are kind of expecting that this year might be an exception to that. What do you think President Trump should aim for at this debate that could seal his chances for re-election?
I think there are three things he needs to do. First of all, he needs to focus on the economy. This is an area where he consistently does better than Joe Biden in terms of what the public thinks of each candidate's ability to handle the economy. Trump performs better than Biden. He does it poll after poll and repeatedly so. And the president needs to focus on what's it going to take to get this economy back on track after the COVID shutdowns. What is it going to take to get us back, hopefully, closer to a position where it was before we got hit with this pandemic? The second thing I think he needs to do is he needs to talk about health care in an affirmative way, and we've touched on this. He needs to present his ideas for what he wants to do if he's reelected, how he's going to address the health care question, particularly if the Supreme Court does strike down Obamacare. What's it going to look like under a Trump administration? Part two, I think he needs to do that. And the last thing is I think he needs to keep Biden on the defensive. And he needs to force Biden into some uncomfortable situations. You know, Vice President Biden has not answered tough questions in years. He certainly hasn't gotten them from the media. And so the president should put him on the defensive, but should also force him to answer for some of the stuff we talked about earlier in this interview, some of the very progressive, very liberal plans that will explode the deficit and are completely unsustainable. I think the president needs to expose these plans as a Trojan horse for the far progressive left.
You don't think he should be focusing on cognitive decline or Hunter Biden, do you?
I just don't, you know, that I've never found those to be really productive issues. I know it gets some of our friends quite animated, but I just think that there are many more issues on which voters will be more likely to believe that Biden is not the right choice. I just don't think it's focusing on Hunter. And look, wherever Biden is cognitively, that will show in the debate. If the president is able to put some pressure on him and force him to answer some tough questions, we'll see if Biden can handle it. If he can handle it, Biden will come out of this debate better for it. But, you know, it's the president's job to put pressure on his opponent.
That's Lanhee Chen. Lanhee is one of the sharpest and best political thinkers, and he was in charge of the policy shop in Mitt Romney's presidential campaign, which when you think back to it, I think back to it fondly. Lanhee, thanks for joining us, and I hope you have a good weekend, and we all have an uplifting and inspiring and encouraging debate coming up on Tuesday night. Coming up on the Medved Show, a Gallup poll about race relations. And a brilliant suggestion on how to depoliticize the court. Involves a constitutional amendment, and no, it's not court packing. Something much smarter. We'll tell you about it and more coming up on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, the riots last night, the shooting of two more police officers. By the way, I just checked. They still have not identified any suspect or arrested anybody, even declared that someone is a person of interest in the shooting of those two cops in Compton, California. And they're sheriff deputies who were shot. And one of them, the woman, is heroic. She is a mother. She's 31 years old. She rescued her partner, even though she was gravely wounded herself, by tying a tourniquet around. This is a guy who just came up to the side of the car and fired into it. And it's all captured on tape. I cannot believe they haven't found him. They're now $700,000 reward. If you know somebody who would like to make a bundle of money really quickly, help identify who this guy is. I mean, $700,000 is a significant reward. Most of that's private money, by the way. And it's appropriate, for God's sake. I mean, two cops are sitting in their car. And last night, they were trying to keep the peace in Louisville, and they're shot. And they're out of surgery. They looks like they're going to be okay. However, you know what it means to recover from bullet wounds? This is a craziness. And last night, Don Lemon's on CNN. And he was talking with a reporter live who was covering the demonstrations, so-called the peaceful demonstrations, in Washington, D.C. And listen to Don Lemon's commentary.
So right where you are now, I mean, right where you are, it doesn't look particularly violent. It does look like there's chaos there.
Okay, it doesn't look particularly violent, but it does look like there's chaos there. Isn't that like that? I know President Trump loves this, that famous description on CNN where he's standing in front of burning buildings and using the term peaceful demonstrations. I mean, this is sad. This is sad. This is, listen to, this is clip number three, Sonny Hostin on The View talking about peaceful demonstrations, but then she mentions something else that doesn't sound exactly peaceful. Listen on ABC.
There were protests in many cities last night, most of them peaceful. In Louisville, almost 100 people were arrested. Police shot one protester with a projectile, and two officers were shot. Thankfully, non-life-threatening injuries. Someone has been arrested in that case, charged with 14, counts of wanton endangerment and two counts of assault on a police officer.
Okay, can we say that the civilian who was wounded by police fire, it was a projectile? The police officers took bullets in their bodies. It's just an unbelievable situation. And then again, what is very striking to me is we talked yesterday, Jesse Jackson, at least, released a plea. And he did this before the sunset for avoiding violence in demonstrations. At least he did that. But so much of our national leadership has been silent. Yes, thank you, Joe Biden. Joe and Jill Biden sent out prayers for the recovery of the two cops. And they, again, and it's important that Biden do this, he denounced the violence that was going on in Louisville and to some extent across the country. But 2 days ago, Kamala Harris, who's been sort of missing in action, was in Detroit. And she took part in a very carefully orchestrated town hall event. And she took a question from a student. You have to listen to the question and listen to the fact that the prospective vice president of the United States does nothing to correct the basis of the question. Listen.
We have Clip from Wayne 02. State Black Student Union. We want to know that given that America is built on racism, sexism, and other evils, how will you, as vice president, advocate, whether through policy or just through the powers that you know that you can advocate on, how will we resolve these injustices for the Black community and specifically for Black women?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for your role of leadership. Part of it is I'm going to need your help. Because one of the biggest problems on the topic that you have raised is the failure to speak truth about America's history with race. You know, right now, Donald Trump is trying to actually, you probably know this, Lieutenant Governor, tried to get rid of the training in the federal government
on
race,
yeah.
on specific aspects of race. literally trying to wipe out history. They're saying there are senators and others who are saying that basically, essentially, we should stop teaching the truth about racism in America.
Okay, no one has said you're supposed to stop teaching the truth. You're supposed to start teaching the truth. And the truth is, he says that America was founded on racism and sexism and other evils. She could say very easily, hey, I have to disagree with you. America was founded on liberty. And yes, we had a lot of problems being consistent on that. Because even though there were ideals of liberty that were put forward, there was still the practice of slavery and still the practice of discrimination, and there's still all kinds of shortcomings. But I'll tell you how we address that. We go back, just as Dr. King did, to the founding documents and try to get America to live up to its professed ideals. But this idea that somehow what we need is training from the federal government to make Americans conscious of our terrible history of race. See, I'm concerned about emphasizing discrimination and horror and wretchedness and terrible, terrible things about the American past. The idea that, in fact, I just saw this. I saw this from a post. This is from a black conservative who said that racism has never been illegal. Racism is illegal right now. It's been illegal for 50 years. What do you think the Civil Rights Bill was? The Civil Rights Bill makes it a crime to discriminate in housing, in hiring, in employment, in loans, in educational opportunity. Now, is that perfect? No. It still exists. But to say that racism has never been illegal, racism has always been part of America, the one-dimensional running down of our country is unprecedented. And this is one of those issues, honest to God, that is going to lose the election for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden unless they get this straight. Most Americans, I think the overwhelming majority, understand that America has had a problem with race. That you could say, as Condoleezza Rice says famously, that racism was our original sin. Slavery was our original sin, and slavery in America came to be based on racism. Okay, with that, not to acknowledge that there has been another part of America, another tradition of battling slavery, of condemning it, of giving your life to eliminate it, of heroically struggling against it. That's why it's so ridiculous to want to tear down statues of Frederick Douglass, of Abraham Lincoln, of Benjamin Franklin, who was very actively involved in the anti-slavery movement. Look, the truth about America that Kamala Harris says that she wants to teach, that she believes will help set us free, that truth is nothing to run away from. It's something to embrace. And I'll tell you what is very sad here. Headline from the Gallup organization, U.S. perceptions of black-white relations sink to new low. And this is just so incredibly sad. Most Americans were upbeat about black-white relations from 2001, when George Bush took power as president of the United States, through 2013, with a percentage calling them good ranging from 63% to 72%. It's now plummeted. It's collapsed. The positive perceptions now are down to 44%. That's extraordinarily sad. What do we do about it? We will continue the conversation looking for the right kind of change in this greatest nation on God's green earth.